Did you have something you want to suggest? I mean, I don't know.
No,
I don't know what
no,
to...
No, no, it's only a funding question.
I see. I see.
There was a period of time...
Oh, I see, providing an attorney is part of the staff
yeah.
thing. And that's not part of the fiscal note right now. It's
no.
just those are four totally administrative positions, not legal positions.
But one of them would be what would become the...
hey, right, right.
But the...
Hello.
Hello?
Question of the independent counsel of the board right now has to rely on the Department of Law for legal advice.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a member of the committee identified except when we have a case now going to the hearing in Fairbank where the case got the complaint is in Fairbanks, the Anchorage staff handled the case, and when they filed a federal court case, got handed off to an attorney in the Juneau office.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in the same office on the same corridor, so she had to accuse herself from advising the board on that matter, so we had to go get an independent attorney to advise the board on a single matter. The other thing that they're uncomfortable with is, based on some court precedent in the state, the attorney general can advise the board, but it has to do it in public session, so she cannot enter the executive sessions to advise them in that role. So they want an independent counsel for that reason. But it has to do not only with ethics, but everything else that may come before them.
Yeah, might as well try to get
Susie
on the line. Time to mess around.
Okay.
So it's not directly related.
She
to
sure, sure. It's just like it's just
the
a.
The thing is, it's like
it's an outcome based. It's an outcome based result
government. Talking to her.
I know. Which is why we're not supporting.
Yeah, I was in this back.
Yeah, the department's not support. Well, the department agreed to put it forward as a budget increment, and I don't know.
This incorporates the LBNA suggestion for signing under oath, the hearing officer discretion issue.
What do you all mean?
The confidentiality things I gave you, and that amendment that you showed to the AG. You'll see it all in there. And then all the changes to the gift section and they're basically all rolled into this one large 12-page executive branch ethics amendment, which I'm just giving to you because I just got it today. Terry's preparing a CS that's going to show the before and after, just of the section of the bill. And I think it's the beauty of it is it really simplifies the hell out of the bill. It takes a ton of that stuff out. And all the open meetings.
Hello, Susie, can you hear me?
Is gone, by the way.
Okay, this is Barbara. We're just about ready to start. I'm just checking out.
What time am I supposed to go to
Centennial? Are online, and if you can hear everybody.
I have to go there.
I'll put you on monitor, and then I'll mute, and I'll really back.
Painful reading.
Okay.
About an hour is all we've got here, and you got to go now.
Later. I mean, I'll stick here for another 25 minutes.
Well, then I can break that out. If you would like me to have it broken out of that amendment, because that amendment basically is a contest of the things you and I worked on to address, you know,
you
making sure.
You guys want to sit up closer. I've got Susie Barnett on the phone here.
Okay, well, we can.
Yeah.
You're just here to listen.
You look familiar.
This has followed you, so I didn't know where you went.
Okay, we'll call this subcommittee meeting together, and we'll... I think I've got about an hour, and I have to go because I have to go down to the Centennial Hall. Ivan's a little while here, and then he has to go. And
I'll leave if you want me to break up the quorum.
No. So we'll do as much as we can today. It's going to be tough for us to get this through because we have a busy schedule. And, Ben, I guess that what I'd really like to do is you're real familiar with this bill?
I'm doing my best.
Okay.
I'm becoming more familiar
probably
with it.
Probably more familiar with it than I am or Representative Berkowitz or Representative Ivan. And unless I see you getting real far afield, I'm going to let you guide us through this bill.
Okay.
And then we can, if we want to talk about it, we will take time to talk about it. So I'd like to have you take the path.
So you don't want to go back to the amendments where we were, and you'd rather start over just overviewing the bill?
Well, what do you mean, amendments where we were?
We were on the second batch of amendments, is how I colloquially referred to them, and I can make a copy of the whole batch for you.
When we were on that second batch of amendments, do you mean when the staff was working on it?
No, last time in committee, we had started going through a memorandum of mine dated the 16th of February.
Okay.
That described several attempts to repair things that were wrong with the bill. The first one was the one that, in a way, attempted to address the problem with knowing what a partisan use of public resources was. But before I go there, I mean, I'm happy to start overviewing the bill again if you want, but I'm also happy to go through amendments if you want.
Well, I think that I guess I don't have any problem going through the amendments, assuming that the reason we have the amendments is you found problems throughout the bill.
Yes, we found little technical things here and there throughout the bill, and we found some really substantial changes once we get up to the executive branch section of the bill. That, you know, it was not in its best possible form when it came over from the Senate, and there is some real need to fix several things. And each amendment that I've given you a memo on, certainly, that you have a copy of.
Well, but the thing that we haven't done in committee, nor have we done here, which I think we need to do, is that as you go through these amendments, we need to take a position.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't done that, to my knowledge. You only presented it to us, and I don't know that even the committee took a position. If the committee took a position on any of those, we could go with the committee's position, but I don't think they did.
Right, and to recap what we've done in House State Affairs, there was an amendment from one of the committee members to delete Section 8 of the bill dealing with the ban on spousal lobbying. And then the amendment that standardized upper-level legislative employees passed, and that is as far as we got, I believe, before in our work on the bill. So
we want to start out where we left off there. That doesn't necessarily mean that we couldn't recommend to change those changes.
No, that's...
I mean, everything is... We have carte blanche authority to
Absolutely.
Recommend. We don't have any authority to make it be the final decision, but we can certainly recommend. So let's do that then. With those two amendments that we made, we'll just start from there.
Okay.
And with the next one, and I have your 16 February memo here.
Okay, and the next one I believe would be KA-20, Elimination of Committee Guidelines. Does everyone have a copy of that?
Uh-huh.
16 February, okay.
Yeah,
it's a one-pager. I attempted, some of these are double-sided, but if they're double-sided, they're the same amendment. I didn't mix up pages like that. I thought that was going too far.
Elimination of committee guidelines.
Right.
Is the one. Okay.
And so you can see I say in my little analysis here, the Ethics Committee had recommended language that they would be allowed to adopt guidelines very similar to regulations as a means of implementing the statutory language in the Ethics Code. And a problem that struck me and I think some others as we looked at this was that this would be, you know, similar to like the adoption of regulations without legislative approval that we already have in the executive branch, which has been a source of many, many problems. So I, you know, tried to confer with the committee staff and asked Susie if she thought that the committee would mind legislative approval of the guidelines. And she said she thought that wasn't necessarily a worthwhile endeavor, and that it would probably be better just to remove the guideline language from the bill. And so this amendment is intended to do that. And as I say further there...
Let me ask a question on that then. Mm-hmm. If we are not going to have any guidelines, because we're just going to not have any, then why did we need them in the first place?
What we have now are advisory opinions, and that when staff or legislators call and they ask for an opinion, they can get informal advice. But if they make a formal request for an advisory opinion, that means that the next time the committee meets, they'll take up the matter of, okay, X staffer called and wanted to know if he or she could do this or that. And the committee will actually vote and say, well, given the circumstances and given the code, this is why that person can or can't do this. That becomes effectively, you know, part of the law for that individual. I mean, if that individual proceeds and does what he or she asked about, then that individual is basically covered and can't be accused by the committee as long as they did what they asked about.
But does it... Can I jump in here?
Sure, go ahead. This is not formal.
Okay. It seems to me that that's okay, because what you're doing is getting approval. You've been immunized for
sure,
your app. But
sure.
It might not necessarily apply the next time someone else comes down the pike. Is that...
No, it does, you're exactly right. It just, it's not a guarantee of protection for the next person. But at the same time, the committee has decided that they're going to publish those guidelines in a book. And, you know, and they come out in this ethics book that has the whole code and everything in it, and then they're supplementarily released by Susie. So people should know about them. I mean, it's part of, you know, educating people about the code, and if people can read about how other staffers have asked a question and how it's been answered. But so they don't have, they would not have the formal effect of, you know, being an extension, a legal extension of the law, like the guidelines would if they were, you know, statutorily set up.
I think, personally, I think that's a good idea to not adopt guidelines, because I think it's really hard to guess what actual cases might be.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to do a lot of saying, well, what ifs? And,
mm-hmm.
and so I think that maybe the what if might not fit the really what if, and so some people might be led astray. It's better to have them respond to actual questions.
Well, and the thing is, if you the onus is on you as a person covered under the code. If you need an advisory opinion now, call and ask for it. And that's the best way to learn about the code. That has helped Susie learn about it. It's helped the members of the committee learn about it. And I think it helps people covered by the code.
So, okay, that's amendment to K-20. So if, of the members here, do you have any problem with that?
It's not establishing guidelines or have the ethics committee adopt those.
Well, the issue is, first thing, if we were to leave this in there, the ethics committee would be required to go down through the statute and make guidelines that were similar to regulations and lay out all these what-ifs. And the other way, by taking this out, it would say, no, they're not going to do that. However, they will respond to specific questions, and those responses become the guidelines.
Okay.
Yeah, okay? Is that okay?
Okay, it is. I just want to be clear, though, what now this section means that, you know, for example, I am affiliated with Special Olympics and with Boys and Girls Club. I can go get money for them, right?
Oh, yeah. The reason that section's in there, that's a very good question. This deletes two references to guidelines in two places, and this is something Terry Kramer caught when we were working on it. The first reference is on page 18. This puts language into the bill that says that a legislator or employee can raise money for a charitable cause. But then the committee also put guidelines in there when they recommended that change, because they were putting another section about guidelines generally in. So we were removing the reference to guidelines in this section, but the rest of the section that allows you to raise money for charity will still be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just.
And then later in the bill, we're taking out the whole guidelines section. That's a cleanup thing. That's so we have to get it in both areas. Good eye.
Got that?
Yeah, I wish it weren't so, but I understand it.
Well, and it remains, I mean, I think it's consistent with what Representative Berkowitz, you know, you said about not trying to be too specific. I mean, there is a wisdom in that. It's just, it's one of those devilish things, knowing what too specific is. But hopefully in this case, we're relegating specificity to when people call on their own and ask, you know, this is my situation, can I do this? So.
Okay, well, let's go on down to the next one then.
So Madam Chairman, I have a question, I suppose. Would it be your desire that I would prepare a committee substitute that incorporated the recommendations of the subcommittee, and so that everything that's consensus that's brought us forward is consensus here, that changes on the way it was when we went into subcommittee?
Do you have anything that we disagree about,
mm-hmm.
and we decide that we can't make our decision, we want to leave it to the regular committee,
mm-hmm.
we'll just leave that as an amendment, and we'll
Very
talk
good.
About that separately.
Very good.
But anything that we can agree with, we're going to persuade them that we're smart and that we're going to have it. So we will put that in as suggested in the draft of a CS.
Excellent. I think that's a wonderful strategy. Going on then, Amendment KA-25, which you should have a copy of. It's one page long. I don't know if anyone else needs it. It really has nothing to do with executive branch stuff, but it may interest you. This reflects the need that arose with the donation of the Capitol School by the City and Borough of Juneau Assembly to the legislature. Part of that contract, which was negotiated under a fair level of public scrutiny here in Juneau, part of the contract allows the public to use the gym over across the street in the Capitol School quite a bit of the time. However, the other part of the contract reserves the gym for legislative use some nights. And that's just something that the Legislative Council wanted. In response to a request for an advisory opinion from a senator a couple of years ago, The committee had said that designation of private space for, someone had asked if they could maybe put an exercise bike in a room down on the first floor, like off of the transportation committee room or something. And the committee said no, because that really would be designating this public space of the Capitol for a personal use by legislators. And because that advisory opinion's out there, it occurred to, gosh, I'm not even remembering if I, who told me to get this drafted up. But at any rate, it just seemed like it's something we needed to do. And I checked with Pam Varney and actually with Clark Greening as well, you know, from the Alaska Committee. And they're very comfortable making sure that there's no technical violation of the ethics code by what is a really substantial investment of, you know, the goodwill of this community in donating that building and some monetary assets on the part of the legislature and turning it into a permanent home for LIA in the coming years. So at any rate, Amendment KA-25 makes sure that we exempt that very specific designation of public space for a somewhat private use, and you know, keeping in mind that it's going to be available to the public a substantial amount of the time as well.
It's a specific designation in the law.
And that, well, we could delegate the authority to the committee to approve this sort of thing on a case-by-case basis.
And if
that,
they don't?
Well, but we're not doing that. If we did it that way, then they could decide in future that there'd be other things that we could designate public space for privately. This is a very limited way of doing it. I think this stands up to public scrutiny well. I mean, it's just doing exactly one thing and one thing only.
So we're giving Ledge Council more authority.
We're specifically exempting anyone who uses that facility, probably. I think anyone who used the legislative gym, if it were improperly designated space, might be violating the code, actually. So it's not so much a matter of giving the council more authority. It's specifying that using the legislative gym in the old Capitol School at this one place in Juneau, you know, our Capitol, where the community's been struggling to make it a more accommodating place, that's not technically a violation of the code. It's not a real substantial relaxation of the code.
You know, I just have to make a comment here. The very fact that we have to figure out what to say in the law to protect that tells me there's something wrong with it. We shouldn't be doing this.
That is a, you know, policy call that you may wish to make. I know that I believe right now part of the provision certainly over there is. And I think you'd find a, I could certainly get someone from the Alaska Committee here to testify on behalf of the amendment, I think. Well, I see a member of the City Borough Assembly in the room as we speak. Fortunately enough,
nice
being in a small town, so I don't know if he wants to come up here and speak to it, but I mean, I certainly understand the, I think the reason it's so specific, though, is to make sure that that concern is as minimal as possible.
Well, I understand why it's supposed so specific, because it is questionable. If it wasn't questionable, we wouldn't be making it so specific. And because it's questionable, that's the reason why we're not making it broad, so that can be evaluated again. I have a problem with that, quite frankly, because it seems to me like if we're going to do anything that is so questionable, then maybe we ought not to be doing it.
I'm not intimately familiar with the terms of the contract, and maybe there are other ways it could be tweaked, so to speak, so that it wouldn't require that.
I guess that on that one, what I would feel more comfortable taking a little more time outside of this meeting
okay.
to deal with that one. Let's go on.
While we're on that section,
yes?
Chair, it seems we talk about telephone or facsimile. Can we also throw email in there, too?
That is... Yeah, that's...
Where are you looking?
That's
just
possible.
One line up, on line 8, and wherever else it's related like that. I mean, we say if you can use it if it's a telephone facsimile with incidental costs, but...
Well, if I can speak to that briefly, that was a recommendation made because the committee was not necessarily deciding that facsimile was telephone, you know, and that just didn't seem fair. I mean, it's like technology is kind of leapfrogging ahead of the language here, so I think adding email is probably a wise idea.
Facsimile predates the telephone, but that's...
My goodness, I had no idea.
Yeah.
You didn't know you were that old.
He's not. He's history.
If you're suggesting that as an amendment, as you said, well, we're in that section, and neither of you disagrees with it, I'd be happy to throw it into a committee substitute.
Well, what we're talking about, Ivan, is that if we use the phone or the fax machine here for a personal use, or an email for personal use, as long as it's an insignificant amount, whatever is that measure, then that's okay. Otherwise, if it's extensive, it's not. I don't know what the difference. What's insignificant and what's not?
Nominal is up to the discretion of the committee, or the legislator or legislative employee reimburses the state. Now, for email, I can't imagine how you'd ever have to reimburse the state. I mean, I guess you could... I mean, that's the least expensive way to communicate. So really, if you want to look at... And it's also the least demanding of immediate response compared to a fax or telephone call. So I think it should be the first one that's exempted in 030 of the ethics code. So
it's getting harder and harder to be down here.
Yeah, so having being able to use email is
desirable.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I might have made, because I don't know a lot of people except calling home. For my husband, I don't think calling home is a violation. I think that should be my legislative authority to let me call home or my husband to call here. But if I call long distance to my home in North Pole, mm-hmm. or if I call anyone or return a call to a friend or a relative, I pay the phone bill.
Sure.
But I still use the phone, and I still use the time, and my staff still had to answer the phone to give me the call. So there is some state spending here. So I suspect that if I have a great big long, and I have had, different amounts of money to pay because I go through the phone bill and find all those numbers and fax numbers because I've used the fax also for personal use, but I pay for the charge for doing the fax. But I feel like I'm very, very conscientious about that.
And I bet you don't charge the state when you call from home for business purposes.
When I call from home for legislative business, I charge the state.
Yep.
I do. Because I do an awful lot of my work from home. If it was just occasionally, there are times I don't, if it's just one or two calls in the month. But usually I have maybe between $10 and $20 a month or something, and I do get reimbursement for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the email thing is pretty common sense, actually. And so if at the committee's direction, I'd be happy to put that into a CS. It's something that just hasn't come up for right now.
What do you think? I think we should add it in, don't you? As long as it's incidental, not extensive money use, which I don't think any of us will. What do you think?
I think so.
You think so?
Completely incidental.
Okay, then do it.
Okay, make it so.
I have no problem with that. It's a couple of years ago, I couldn't afford my own home. My consistent call collect. And I try to go by.
Here.
Cool. I gave up on it.
Got you back. Oh, that was frustrating. And maybe you finished the email discussion. I had something I really wanted to mention.
Oh, well, listen. Oh, we can always go back and erase that decision and wait for you.
Oh, thanks. I'll just bark in. I've been offline, so perhaps you've discussed this. When you were talking about phone and fax, those two are public records at the moment, clearly public records, and we have a precedence where I can go in and investigate those uses and misuses. When you add email in there, you are setting a precedence for the legislature. At this point, I have never gone in and investigated and retrieved those tapes and gone into email. So I just wanted to check and make sure that that's your intent. What you are saying is I can legitimately go in after that information if there is a complaint alleging misuse.
Susie, if I can just ask you this, you would be going after the records about whether or not an email was sent, from whom to whom, the time, maybe even the electronic data load, the size of it. But you're not going for content of message any more than you would be with a phone or a fax, are you?
Well, because it's accessible information, yes. I would probably go for
content. That's why I wouldn't use an email for personal use.
And it's specific. I can't go in. My understanding of how email cases have worked, and certainly there's case record that says you can't go after all the emails, but, if somebody says, look, this person's abusing it and doing this on these dates or this topic, yes, I think I'd be able to go after content.
I understand that you would, given the motivation, given the basis on which to pursue it, but I wouldn't think it would become automatically available. I think there'd be two tiers of information that would be released about that, the first being the evidence of transmission messages. Maybe you'd automatically want to know what was in them because you could, more than a fax or a phone call that wasn't recorded.
Well, on that point, though, is what we're putting or suggesting to put in here is that incidental use of the email is okay. Extended use of email is not okay. So I would think that if you were to check incidental or extended, because someone made a complaint, you could check, and they said, well, they've been calling, I know they've been sending it to this person for a lot of times or whatever. If you went in and found out that they only did it once or twice, that would be the end of it, wouldn't it?
I think you could be right, Representative James, and I'm perfectly comfortable. I just wanted you folks to acknowledge that this is a step opening up that email, which has been a gray area.
Sure.
Yeah. And on that same point, if we didn't do this, and somebody said, I know so-and-so is using his email or her email for personal reasons, you could check and find out that was the case, and then they would be in trouble.
Correct. And as an investigator, I like this language. I just wanted to make sure that we were aware we were going to that next step.
Yeah, but just to be very clear, what I'm looking at is on page 9 of the bill, as it's currently written. Susie, I hope you're following along. On line 8, we would insert after telephone, comma, or electronic mail, comma, before facsimile. Actually, we would put an or in there because then there would be two ors. It would say telephone, electronic mail, or facsimile.
Yes, I see where you are.
And then also down on line 30 under A5.
Correct.
To be consistent. So, yeah, that's what I will, that's what I'll do. And,
okay.
You know, we can maybe, I can ask maybe Terry to comment on the ramifications of that in terms of the content of the messages and the privacy.
Well, I think that people need to know that if that their electronic mail can be retrieved, it might make a difference to what you might want to say.
We might want to send out an email to that effect, actually. All right, then. So, but back to Amendment KA-25. We're going to think about that and revisit it.
That's right.
Okay. Amendment KA-26.
Wait, don't leave without me. Let's see, I've already lost.
KA-26 is it's a short little one. Changing the effective date.
Well, 26.
Uh-huh. Oh, we've just dealt with that this morning, sort of.
KA-26, yes, it's very similar. In fact, this would be a change in the provisions of this bill that relate to...
I think we better revisit that.
You want to revisit it and not go into it now?
Now we don't have a lot of time.
Okay. I actually have another amendment that deals with sections 1 and 2 of the bill that I'm probably just going to roll this puppy into then, because it really is all one issue. It's, you know, the things you discussed under SB 275.
I seriously think about how we ought to deal with this issue in broader terms, not just so narrow.
Okay. Okay, then going on to KA-27, and there's a typo in the memo I distributed here. The italicized capital language telling you what it is there, expedited effective date for session, that doesn't make any sense. The amendment deals with, does everyone have a copy? It deals with a judgment made by APOC staff in the Anchorage office, yes.
Wait, time out. This is a title change, is it not?
Yes, it is, and I don't know that the title change...
I don't know if we get to go do that.
It'll require a resolution if the bill is amended that way. I think it's a matter of some disagreement whether or not the title change is necessary if we just make this change here. It certainly isn't necessary if we restrict its applicability to state office campaigns. However, the recommendation of the drafter was that if we were going to go ahead and... I wanted to look at the issue from the top down. APOC, because it hasn't come up in a state office context yet. It came up in municipal races last fall. APOC's Anchorage staff decided that if a business puts a sign up, that's a prohibited contribution, which really, really irritated quite a few candidates and constitutional scholars who thought that was just, you know, trampling all over people's right to express their support for people they wanted to elect, and especially businesses that, you know, I mean, to try to assign such a value to a sign posted in the window of one's business is really stretching, is what people thought, and was not the intent of the people when they passed that initiative. So this would just basically statutorily ensconce the standard that political signs are not contributions to a campaign of value. And if we want to get around the title change issue, it's easy enough to do by simply restricting the applicability to state office campaigns. That's not how Amendment KA 27
currently works. I think we can do a resolution. If it's a good amendment, I think we can do a resolution.
I can't believe we have to put this in law. It's absurd.
Well, they vacated that ruling, but I mean, who's to say they're not going to go back to it? And I don't know. I mean, I think you could speak to members of all political parties from, you know, local races around the state. I mean, there was a $1 assigned value being assigned here in Juneau, and it was $10 a sign up in Fairbanks. And it's just silly. It's just silly. I mean, if someone were in the business of posting signs, there would be some validity in saying...
I would respond to that. Well, this is not a very formal meeting here, so if you feel like you need to say something...
The commission did review staff's preliminary decision that posting a sign on a business may be a violation of the new campaign disclosure law that prohibits contributions by businesses. At the commission's meeting in November, they determined that they were very uncomfortable with that given permission, posting a campaign sign, such as a yard sign, even if it is on a business or corporation, spoke to the candidate's First Amendment rights and should not be regulated. Therefore, although we sent this little newsletter over to everyone and it had a little thing about campaign signs, it is the commission's position that a candidate may post her campaign signs on any business that permits it. It would only be a contribution if it was a neon sign, a banner being pulled by an airplane, things of that nature.
Something that would normally you would have to pay for.
If you would normally have to pay to be on the billboard or a large electronic.
There was another part. Yeah, there was another part of that opinion was that also, if they put up a corporation put up a sign for somebody, they had to do it for others too. Is that negated as well?
Yes, they can. The business says that was part of staff and this comes about. You know, the commission staff was really trying to figure out how the new campaign disclosure law worked. When this first question came to us, it was from a municipal candidate in Fairbanks, and staff's initial reaction was, put their signs where they want. It's not our, you know, that's not our business. And then someone said, an opponent said, well, it's on a business, and therefore the business is making a contribution. And then commission staff said, well, maybe that's how it is. And usually when the commission staff is required to do a preliminary finding, we do the narrowest. And because the commission is the body with the authority and not its staff. So that's how that came about. It was very unfortunate.
Well, it's just the two of us now.
Let's
Can we
it.
Just leave this out?
Yeah, let's nuke it.
The only thing I would point out is, you know, in the context of political contest, that's when this is going to come up. It's going to be when someone has a friend who has a nicer window spot, you know, and then their opponents are going to be incessantly, ever and anon in the future, going to the commission saying, illegal violation. And I think having some sort of standard there, I mean, maybe the commission could adopt language like this is a formal policy, but I think it'd be good to make sure that...
I don't see it.
This whole window thing is a pain.
I think it was a big mistake, and they've recognized the big mistake, and they won't make the big mistake again.
Okay.
That's my personal opinion. Okay, so the majority of us here decided that we're going to not do that one.
Okay.
That was K
A27.
So that's
a question, Representative James. Did you pass out Senator Miller's bill concerning campaign and the governor's?
No, we did not.
I just have one thought that. Because that whole bill deals with campaign finance, it's so tempting to encourage you as a State Affairs Committee to consider having changes to campaign finance go into that bill and pull them out of this ethics arena.
I understand your concern, but I don't think that's going to happen.
It would go, but I just thought I'd mention it.
Thank you.
You know, Susie, it's like communism. On paper, it's a fascinating idea.
Okay, we're on here. We're moving right along.
Amendment KA 28.
Yeah.
And Brooke, I hope we'll clarify this if we don't have the latest from APOC on it, but I'm going to go ahead and proceed in the assumption that we don't. Bulk mail permits. I guess APOC's interpretation of the campaign finance law has led some legislators to go out of the way, and they've beefed up that post office bulk mail permit income and got two, one for the legislative office and one for their campaign. Or if it's a personal one that they have, it's kind of ambiguous to some, I suppose, whether or not they can use it for both purposes. And this amendment, lengthy as it is, achieves no more important purpose than making sure that it's all right in our APOC's eyes to have one bulk mail permit that you use for personal purposes without having it considered an illegal donation to your own campaign.
I like that one.
There aren't that many bulk mail permits out there, and I mean, really the only beneficiary of this is the post office, if you force everyone to get two. So with that, I'll turn to Brooke and see if she...
You know, if I may, Madam Chair, that's what the staff is sort of like, where did this come from, and why didn't someone just request an advisory opinion? Because we don't have a problem.
Oh, really?
So I don't know.
Someone came straight to me as opposed to going to you.
Why didn't they request, an advisory opinion, which would have given them formal binding advice, but this is from space.
I guess that I do have a little concern about not specifically saying that for the same reason that people would think they might have to have two.
Mm-hmm.
What is the permit now? $75? What is it? How much is it?
I think they're more than that.
I think there may be more than that.
I think they're over 100 a year now.
Yeah.
And you have to, you have to make sure you keep it up and
the
negative.
Gene Terrio and I did, we shared one.
Mm-hmm.
That was another thing. And certainly, and so, we helped to pay for the fee. We both shared, but it was in his name. But we used it. So it seems to me like that making everybody get a permit is a little ridiculous. And I would think that if several people wanted to use a permit, that would be okay. I don't have any problem with that, and I wonder if we should specifically say that in this bill to make it perfectly clear that you can share a bulk permit. Most of the mailing I do now, I do through Fairbanks Resource Agency, Quick Mail, so I pay them for using theirs. But if the only time that a permit is used is if you want to know where something came from, you look to see where the permit, who had the permit,
mm-hmm.
to see who did something. In fact, as they had mail about me sent out last year to all the Republicans in my district, and I tried to figure out who it came from, and the only clue we had was to look at the bulk mail permit, which only told where it came from and still didn't tell who it was because it had been coming from a person who was in the business of doing that. So that's the only place where you'd run into a problem is if somebody sent some mail out and it was small enough that it didn't have to say where it came from or who paid for it. And people will do that if they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then you won't be able to find out necessarily who it came from unless the person whose name was on the permit was willing to tell you who did it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a flip side of this whole issue, and I just don't know what the answer is on that. So I think we should have it clear in here.
Well, this is a different approach. I mean, this assumes that a legislator may have used campaign assets to acquire a bulk mail permit in the course of an election.
And they're going to use it for their own benefit.
Right. Well, and so that's just basically says that one acquired under those circumstances, because this isn't a list of other things you can keep from your campaign. So to be honest, I mean, what this approach would encourage you, if you didn't have one, to buy one. You know, you'd be a fool not to if the law is going to exempt you from, using it, considering it a gift in future. The smart thing to do whenever you ran for office would be to get a bulk mail permit if you hadn't had one before. And then you'd be able to use that permit, really the way I read this, only for your own campaign. If I did want to give it to my colleague's campaign, I would probably have to report that as a contribution, the way this is currently written. We could exempt that. I don't know if that's as reasonable, because this gives everyone the opportunity to get his or her own. If they want to get their own privately, they can, and then
yeah,
the law be damned.
When I was first running, and Gene was first running, that's when we shared, he bought the
mm-hmm.
permit, and we each paid half, and we both used it. And then for the last three or four years, I think, I've been going to Fairbanks Resource Agency, and when I was down here and mailed something, I went to the place out here. They have the disabled to do that sort of thing, and that's who I used. So I've never had a permit since then.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole question is whether or not you can spend any campaign money for personal use. And if you were to use that once you buy it, and then you use it for your business or personal use or loan it to a friend or whatever, you'd have a problem.
There's an absurdity. I mean, the amount of money we're talking about here is so small.
But at the same time, it's absurd to have to get two. And now, one thing that might solve this problem is I don't think the post office would allow, well, it would require a level of cooperation we don't have to have one for the entire legislature.
And do people really think we're going to be corrupted for $50 a year?
Of course. That's why we're here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Thank you.
All we can do in the approach we take by this...
We have an education to get, my
I appreciate
email.
Your wisdom.
If you want to revisit this issue, that's fine. I mean, it would be necessary to, you know, approach it from a different point of view to put into effect, I think, something in statute that would not count any use of a bulk mail permit as a donation to a campaign under any circumstance, so that anyone could use anyone's.
Let's revisit that for different wording.
With the intended effect of, I mean, what are you interested in trying to see that's
fixing the problem?
Yeah, but if I don't know what it is for a permit, but is it? Does anybody know what it is? Is it $150? Because it seemed to me like what, and when last time when Gene and I shared, we paid $75 apiece, and we both paid it out of our campaign account.
I think it's $150. I think that sounds right.
$150. So if a person spends $150 on it, you have to mail at least $300 out to even be able to use it. I think $300 is the minimum that you can send under it. So if you just used it once, it might be kind of spendy. If you used it to send to your district and you sent out 4,000, which is generally what I have to send, is 4,000. If you divide that, it's not very much per each one. You've already got your money's worth, so it's free now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're giving yourself anything free, but it could be construed to be giving yourself something free. I don't know what to think about that. I don't know.
I mean,
it's another one of those things. If we have to put this in here, then maybe we shouldn't be doing it.
Well, the other approach would be not to restrict it to your own individual one. I mean, you could just make bulk mail permits not things of value in the eyes of the campaign contribution code. I mean, if they're so inconsequential in value,
I mean,
that's the problem. Yeah. Not just for individuals. Not so it's an asset that you're encouraged to buy with your own resources, but that it's just something that's...
Once we go down the road of creating these legal fictions, then there's no telling where it stops. I mean, what about the pens I bought with my campaign funds and, you know, all that other stuff?
We don't talk about non-durable office supplies, fortunately, in the code, and I'm glad we don't. Well, maybe this is something. The commission is fortunately meeting tomorrow. Why don't we show them a copy of this amendment?
It's on their agenda.
And then they can solve the problem for us, and we won't have to put it in the statute. Once they
okay, we'll revisit this one.
Okay, I mean, because honestly, the commission are meeting tomorrow morning in the next 2 days, and if there's any parts of this I should be there for, you should let me know. I've never attended an APOC meeting, and I just would love to.
Okay, now we have 35.
35. Legislative use of private offices. This goes back to the difficulty being down in Juneau, whether or not you can make phone calls issue, and this is an additional level of protection that has been proposed for your consideration for legislators only in your internal offices, which would let you pretty much just use the office and be at home in there as long as it wasn't interfering with the performance of public duties and you weren't causing the state anything special unless you paid them back for it. It goes into 2460.030, which is the list of prohibitions on behavior. But as I said, this refers specifically to legislators only.
Isn't this what the president and vice president got in trouble for?
This is similar to what the president and vice president got in trouble for. Yes, it is. This doesn't deal with the president and vice president. It doesn't deal with the White House. It deals with legislators in the Capitol. However, the current interpretation of the ethics code for the governor in his mansion is much more relaxed relaxed than that Hatch Act interpretation that was brought to bear on the vice president was. You know, so we already have, in terms of executive legislative branch parity on that issue, at a state level, a much more permissive standard of what can happen in the governor's mansion. This isn't for people, legislators' houses, of course, but it takes into account the relative isolation of Juneau and coming down here for session, and the fact that they're behind that wall, and that their staff aren't helping them do any of this stuff.
I'm waving my hand at any
oh,
moment.
Oh, good, you got to make a sound. I can't hear it.
if I could just speak to this amendment for a moment. The committee, I think, has not had a chance to ever look at this amendment. Probably individuals, I am sure in discussions, a few individuals would be opposed to it. I don't know as a group how they would vote. Big concern over a couple of things that I didn't get a chance to talk to Ben about. It doesn't say session only.
No, it doesn't. I'm aware of that, Susie.
And
but
I think
it's targeted towards session.
Read session only if you're going to take this approach. Also, the legislator who wanted this language and who talked it over with me felt pretty comfortable saying no cost. Not nominal is an interpretive word, and that there would be no cost involved. And clearly the intent was no staff, no cost, no piece of paper used, that kind of thing. So. But there is a very clear line that, you know, there is no charge to the state.
Well, Susie, if I can interrupt for a second, what is there really no charge if I'm using a state phone and a local call? I mean, so that's 1/75 millionth of our local phone bill for that line for that month, that one call, and it's 1/400 millionth of the long-term depreciation value of a phone that will crumble to dust over time. You know, I mean, is there really no cost if you say no cost?
I think that you're not solving the problem that particular legislator wanted solved if you put nominal in. Because then we go to an interpretation and leave people open to, I know it sounds funny, Ben, but open to complaints being filed. If you say no cost, I think that the committee understands no cost. I mean, they're not going to talk about lights or the phone's value over 20 years.
Well, I redrafted this several times trying to, you know, reflects the request that was made of me, and I think that's how nominal still ended up in there. I remember at one point trying to use the phrase no discrete cost, you know, so that there was no separate charge being made for whatever it was, which presumably one could attribute to a piece of paper, but would be much harder to attribute in either of the absurd examples I just gave you. You know, how do you break out part of a local phone bill for one call or that much wear and tear on a phone?
Right, and we look at this issue often, you know, on what nominal is. I'm just speaking to that, but also an additional concern is that that there's nothing that says that your office couldn't be your primary place of business during session. And one of the things that I know, Ben, you and I talked about, and just to bring it to the committee's attention, is that your primary place of business during session.
You know, on that point, Susie, because, see, I am in business, and I'm in business when I'm home, and I'm in business when I'm here, and so if I didn't bring my own computers and things with me from home, I quite likely would be liking to use my computer here. Of course, I buy my own computer here, have always since I came, but even then, I don't, because I do get service from the state, I bring my computer with me, so I have a bedroom at home set up as an office, so I don't have that problem. I don't, however, have a copy machine at home, but it is not a plain paper copier, and it also I can't use some for it has to run things through, so I don't have any way of opening up, and then occasionally I will come down here to make a copy of something when I'm in the office, which is usually one copy. And if it's more than that, I count the pages and I reimburse. But there may be some people who have a business who don't necessarily have an office at home. And I see what you're saying. You don't want them to have an office here in the Capitol. And I think that's probably a good idea.
Well, but let me ask you this question. My first boss was Dr. Menard. He has patients, you know. I mean, if you don't, you're not going to have a Juneau medical office, but you could end up being on the phone quite a bit for the well-being of your patients if you're a physician and you're a legislator. And, you know, I mean.
Yeah, and in his case, his patients were in the MATSU, It was a long-distance call, and he probably reimbursed for it.
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. I mean, I know he did, but, I mean, the whole point being, if it's still all the time, this whole standard of, you know, how much time you're spending doing your business in your office, it's like it's unavoidable in some contexts. One thing I'll point out, Susie, is this is a special, you know, extra exemption for legislators. Most of these protections, most of what this accomplishes, is already afforded for legislators and staff higher up in the list of you know, behavioral guidelines.
This is extra icing.
This is just for legislators.
Cake.
Well,
I
it recognizes the special.
Susie, what? I personally, honestly, can't speak on behalf of the committee. I personally like some clarification of this, and I like to offer legislators who are citizens that work in other places an ability to have a life. Recognizing they're on call or at the call of the house often, you know, and to be able to use their space without getting into trouble. I think we need to further refine it so that the public can swallow this concept. And that's why I'm trying to go for something about, you know, that it's not your primary place of business, that there is no charge. So they read it and they say, okay, I guess that makes sense. You know, it means staff can't be fielding calls all day. That's one of the things about a primary place of business. If you're putting it on your business card and you've got your 465 number, you're in trouble. The committee will be very upset about that, and probably, if there's a complaint, you know, go forward on it. But I like the idea. Ben and I've talked about this. If we could just squeeze it down a little, tighten it up some.
Well, it's easy to change the language so it says, if there's no cost to the state, and just take out as nominal after supplies. You know, that deals with the cost issue, I guess. I don't know if it addresses that idea of how much.
What we're trying to figure out here is somebody can do a little business when they're in the office without running their whole business out of the office.
Exactly.
Well, so if they're doing a little business, they're probably writing on a piece of paper, using the telephone, right? So if they're using the telephone and it's a local call, we've already covered that. And if it's a long-distance call, then they ought to be paying for it anyway. So what are we doing?
Well, what if you're doing other things and you're not using the phone or using, maybe you're doing business, maybe you have somebody in there with you, maybe you're selling them something, maybe you're doing other things. There's
the
all kinds of things. You're using the space because you don't have, you don't want them to go to your apartment, you want to meet with somebody, and it's totally unrelated to legislature. It's related to something else, and so you invite them to your office in the evening, and you sit and you talk about this and take some time or whatever.
What's the problem?
I don't see any problem with it, but I, at all, providing that it doesn't, you know, I guess it seems to me like the public's concern would be the fact that you're doing personal stuff instead of working.
Well,
I can't see that there's any cost to that, to the state, that you're getting for free.
It seems to me if it's incidental, and I'm trying to sell, say for example, I'm trying to sell my car, and it's an incidental part of selling a car to have the guy meet me because I'm busy doing everything else, and he comes to the office and gives me a check, that's fine. But it also seems to me that if I'm in the business of selling cars, then I shouldn't be doing it in this building.
Mm-hmm.
I should be going somewhere else.
Well, the standard that we put in here, and obviously we didn't tweak this language well enough, but it was if the use does not interfere with the performance of public duties. You know, the committee has that standard by this proposed language to decide if you're selling your cars all the time, well, then you're not really legislating. I mean, you know, you're using the office, but I mean, that's not a very strong standard. I accept that.
But it isn't a very strong standard. What if you're doing legislative work in Juneau and you live in Juneau, or let's say that we were in Anchorage, not in Juneau, because we had that issue coming before us. I can see a much bigger problem in Anchorage than we have in Juneau if that were the case. I can see that people would be doing a lot of business from their office, and if they were in Anchorage. So I kind of agree with Susie. I think that if we're going to put this in at all, that it's allowed, I think it needs to be specific in some way. I don't have a clue how to design that. And we're not getting very far. We're just revisiting everything here.
Representative James, the language of Representative Berkowitz, the language that brings you to this discussion is that in the current code, a legislator or an employee is prohibited from using public facilities for non-governmental purpose or private benefit. So we've got real specific prohibition, and then we've got an excusing language that says, and It does not prohibit limited use of state property and resources for personal purposes if the use does not interfere with the performance of public duties and the cost or value related to the use is nominal.
Wait, hold on.
Berkowitz's example, if you were trying to sell your car, your personal car, you'd probably come well within that limited use and we wouldn't be sending you to ethics jail. If it was your business right now and you were trying to work with your salesperson in Anchorage every evening to keep your business alive, using your state, that state facility for that purpose, you may be in violation. It would depend on an interpretation.
See, I would say you're not even then, because the building itself or the facilities here are not providing you a business benefit.
But the way the law is and the way this committee has interpreted it is using public facilities for non-governmental or private benefit, and they say your office...
But there's no benefit. I'm not getting a benefit. In fact, it's to the detriment of my business that I'm operating out of this facility.
But you're not...
It's like being in jail already. I can't get to where my principal place of business is.
Susie, it's like you're comparing him to not having a roof over his head, though. I mean, you're saying he's using this space to his benefit. It's because you're not outside in the rain is what I think she's comparing you to. Not that you're not back in Anchorage. That's just a point of comparison the committee's obviously decided to make. I don't know if it's rational, but that's why this exemption is being proposed.
Well, when it comes to the original language that you said, does that meet the executive and... the legislative ethics, the one you mentioned, that you can't use the state office for personal use, does that cover the gamut, or is that just for legislatures? I don't know which part...
That was just legislative ethics code.
Okay. I have a problem in that there may be times when we can't even go, we might have to do some business, and we can't go home to do it because we have to be here for another meeting. And sometimes we, you know, towards the end of the session, we're working long, long hours. I can see that there might be times when we have things that we have to do. And we are a citizen legislature. One of the things that people complain, we get too much per diem, and I can tell you it costs me a lot more than my per diem to be down here and not be home doing my work. So, there's a lot of trade-offs, and I think that we need to be sure that we've covered them. I don't know what to say here. I don't like that necessarily, the current code. I think we do need to make it a little more clear, but I'm ready to willing to revisit that one, too, and I'm going to have to go because I've got to go down to the chamber and talk to them. So we're going to have to quit for today.
Can I say one more thing very quickly?
Yes.
Just I wanted to make sure that you both saw the explanation of Section 6. Someone had asked about this the first time we sat down. I brought the memo last time, but we never got to talk about it. It's from Terry Kramer to my boss, Attention Me, the 13th of February, and it deals with that exciting unemployment insurance provision of the bill that none of us seemed to get. And I'll work on this legislator's office thing before Thursday. I'll try to come back with a revised amendment.
And I'm feeling completely whelmed by this bill.
Whelmed?
Yes.
Just whelmed. Not under, not over, but just whelmed at the time.
Well, very whelming. It's very whelming.
All right. So Thursday at 3?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Having to leave
Yay,
early.
Susie,
bye, Susie.
Three.
I fixed the mute button before then.
Okay. I'm going to hang your phone up.
They can beat me
I
up, too.
I think they're talking about legislation starting tomorrow at 11, but especially because of 275.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk.
We'll talk. Can I bum that,
I don't... You got it.
25 back? That's my only copy.
275,
sure. Yeah, that's the new one. And I can just give you one if you're just going to have to copy that for him anyway. That's the baby. Now, let's go ahead and assume on the presumption, proceed on the assumption.
It has to.
Something like that. And we'll try to say that again. I don't know where I end up. That we're going to break out his hearing officer option, if you're uncomfortable with it. Everybody go ahead and have that yanked? Before, because I don't want Aaron to go ahead and start pretending that the terrorist is CS. You know, whenever you have him, we should talk to him.
No, it's
always
had it.
You should love him. You should love him. You know, this is really addressed most of the concerns that we talked about. You know, at the end, there may be stuff we haven't discussed yet.
It would
be worse if we weren't trying to have a chance to talk to him. You have the friends you got.
We have
the friends you got. That's great. Yeah, that goes to Portella.
Yeah.
Senator?
Yeah.
doing great.
Tim, how you doing? Hell of a job.
I'm doing my best.
You're doing a good job.
Yeah.
Well, I'm impressed. I mean, a lot of times, sometimes I watch MTV. Today I came down in person today. You're doing a good job.
Well, obviously, we're going to have to tweak this one a little.
Tweaked, but you know what? As they went round and round, they...
Sure.
And started articulating their interpretation.
And you, I mean, you're thinking about businessmen. And I said, think about doctors.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Then it's not they're just making money all of a sudden. They're taking care of someone. But
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It just totally changes it.
It sure does.
Yeah. Totally changes it. So, I mean, that's, I don't have a problem trying to tweak that. Yeah. This one I'm just going to
have to do. I'll ask the committee on them all.
But that one over no problem. And what I'm doing is everything they agree to here, I'm going to put in the...
Who protested this? Who's saying about this?
Well, Jeanette thought if we have to put an exemption, maybe we shouldn't be doing it. So it was the gym, and it's part of the contract at 39 times.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd just have...
We're all in violation now.
I'll just have that as big as...